What do you get when you have one voiceover girl?
Oh, and me. That makes two voiceover girls.
Okay, when you have two voiceover girls, separated by one pond and two perspectives.
I know. You get the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast.
That's right. Let's listen as Rami and Jessica share their journey into the voiceover industry.
Hi, and welcome to the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast. I'm Rami Santosh.
Hi, I'm Jessica Matheson. In today's episode, you'll be hearing a whole lot less from us and a whole lot more from some VO friends from both sides of the pond. Rami and I spent some time speaking with some other voiceover artists about their thoughts and experiences in the voiceover industry. First up, Suzanne Amy from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So, Suzanne, why did you get into voiceover? How did you get into voiceover?
I have a voice degree, and I actually have sung in choirs for most of my life, you know, starting from children's choirs and then, you know, in high school, university. And then as an adult, I sang in various different choirs. And like I said, I have a degree in voice. So singing, for example, to be specific. So I have a degree in voice. And so I thought, I heard a voiceover and I thought that it was just about having a nice voice. And so because I have a nice voice or a nice singing voice, I was like, well, I can do voiceover because I have a nice voice. And I thought, well, the only thing I really need to learn is the technical skills and then I'm good to go.
So your degree was to do with singing, not voiceover?
It's a degree in classical singing, like opera, art songs. I've performed in operas and I've performed in musical theater as a community theater, not professional, but community theater. Yeah, I've learned all about music and singing and performing. And so I just thought it was about having a nice voice that as long as I learned the technical skills, I would be good to go.
Giant butt coming.
But... As I'm sure we've all learned in the voiceover industry, it is so much more about, there is a huge component of marketing, self-marketing, and that's the area that I'm focusing on now in my voiceover life. Because I've learned some voiceover techniques from coaches and I've learned the technical skills to record and edit my recordings. That's fine. So now the thing I'm focusing on is reaching out and marketing and getting my voice heard by people who hire voice talent. So that's the thing that I'm sort of focusing on right now. And that's, I think, the biggest learning curve for me is the marketing and the self-promotion, which I wasn't expecting and I didn't know about. So I'm learning all about that right now.
Well, welcome to the voiceover industry and being self-employed and having to learn to market.
Exactly. Totally new. I didn't know anything about this. Like I said, I thought it was just a nice voice and you can edit your own stuff and you're good. But it's so much to do with like marketing and reaching out and self-promotion and confidence. You have to have so much confidence in yourself and you have to really be able to sell yourself. You have to approach a company and go, hey, I'm a voice talent and I'm great. Of course, don't say it like that, but I'm a voice talent. I'm great. I'm awesome. I'm going to make your videos sound like the most amazing video ever. Yeah. And if they say no, you have to have the confidence to be able to be like, no, this is what I can bring to the table. And like, you know, this is why I charge what I charge. And this is why I'm awesome, you know? So there's a whole other aspect that I'm sort of learning about now. So I'm really bad at starting things. So I actually was like, I signed up for a course in 2016 and I took a bunch of courses in 2016 and I signed up with some coaches and I had prepaid for a demo back then. I never recorded my demo until 2020.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I prepaid this course. I did a bunch of webinars back in 2016. I just got busy with life. You know, I was newly married and we were living in the country and I was working and I was doing musical theater projects in my evenings. I was volunteering for a musical theater company. So I was really, really, really busy. And, you know, I was living my life and I was like, in the back of my mind, I was always like, oh, I still want to do voiceover. I still want to do voiceover. And so finally in 2019, There's a coach that actually lives in my city nearby named Shelly Cohen. She is a working professional voiceover and she actually lives like 10 minutes from me. So I signed up for some individual coaching with her. This is back in 2019 when we could still do stuff in person. And I did a bunch of coaching with her and that got me sort of confident. It got me ready. And I reached out to the company that I prepaid my voice, my demo, and I did my demo recording in early 2020. And so that's when I feel like I sort of like launched for real, because I got a website. I got my voice demo. I got my website. I signed up for some pay to play sites. I signed up for Gravy for the Brain. I started doing all these webinars and I'm like focused in like my evenings rather than being involved in outside projects. I was like really involved in like focusing about learning. So I would say officially I've been launched only a year, but mentally I've been like thinking about it for many, many years before that.
Wow. So were there any surprises? I mean, you kind of mentioned that you were kind of surprised to learn that it wasn't just your voice and the technical thing.
Yes.
But was there anything that you were just kind of astounded by where you were like, wow?
All the time. Like seriously, all the time. I'm learning things all the time that I had no idea about. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now, but it's just, there's just so much in voiceover, in audiobooks. Because originally I thought, oh, I'm gonna record audiobooks. And then I joined a Facebook group and I found out how hard audiobooks are, because there is so much to do. Like for each finished hour of audiobooks, you know, there's like 8 hours of preparation and editing and all sorts of stuff. I was astounded just how much work is involved in audiobooks. And there's been other things over the past, you know, year and a half that I've learned that are just so astounding. Can't think of any other examples at this moment, but just like I didn't know what motion capture was. That was a thing I'd never heard of before. I knew that dubbing was a thing, but I didn't realize how much work was involved with it and how much of an art form dubbing is.
No kidding. To see like the screen that they have to try to match up the lips.
Yes.
And the whole bit. Like you can see why there are times when you see foreign films or foreign cartoons where you're like, wow, that doesn't match at all. You know, like
yeah.
You can see why.
Exactly. So I'm learning stuff all the time that I am just like totally astounded by it. Things I never even thought about. So I'm learning stuff all the time.
It's such a vast industry. You have no idea until you actually get into it to know how big it is. So, Suzanne, now that you've been in voiceover for over a year since your launch, do you still feel voiceover is right for you?
I think so. I am I enjoy working independently. I love acting because I've done it a lot, you know, non-professionally, just in community theater groups. I think in England, they call it AmDram, amateur dramatic, AmDram community theater. Anyway, so I love acting. I love using my voice. I love singing. So I think, and I love the remote work, and I do actually really like the technical aspect. I really do like editing my recordings. I think that's really fascinating. And I like learning about my DAW, my digital audio workstation. I have found it frustrating at times, but also really interesting to learn about how to edit. And I actually took a course in music production because I wanted to learn more about the technical aspects of that. And that was super fascinating. That was back in 2018. I learned about, it was just a beginner course, but it was super, super fascinating. Yeah. So I do think it is right for me. And I do like the remote work aspect of it. And I have a studio, I have a home studio. I'm all set up to go. I have Source Connect. I have everything. I'm totally set up to work from home. And with the pandemic, I mean, I'm working from home anyway. So, so this just works out great.
Brilliant. That's just fantastic, Suzanne. And I'm so glad that you're now set up and ready to go. For me, what you said, that voiceover is not just about having a nice voice, is so true, because that's the thing that people don't understand. And just totally agree with you when you said about marketing and the fact that you've got to have the confidence to get out there and tell people you're awesome. Wow. Yeah, that's the challenge sometimes, I think. That's brilliant. Thank you. So now we're going to hear from Simon Lewis from the UK. So Simon, tell me, how did you get into voiceover?
I didn't actually intend to, although if I'm completely truthful with myself, I suppose in many ways it was always bubbling along under the surface. When I look back, somehow there was a constant theme running through many things that I was doing professionally for a number of years. And it all went back, and I can actually remember the very first time someone said to me, "You've got a really good voice. You should do public speaking." Mm-hmm. And I think I was probably about 12 or 13 at the time. And the idea of doing something like that. I mean, I didn't even want to join the debating club at school because standing in front of people and them looking at me was just a very scary prospect, which mm-hmm. is probably a lot to do with the reason why I'm talking to you from a dark little padded cell in the basement of my house at the moment where nobody can see me. But that aside, it became a constant theme through everything that I was doing. And then I suppose getting on for about 15, 18 months ago, perhaps a little bit longer, a bit hazy with all the dates these days.
It's all a blur.
Every day, every week, every month is the same, right? I was, and this was before anyone had heard of coronavirus and all the rest of it, I was working on a training that I was going to do for some of my day-to-day work that I was doing back then. And that was actually all about teaching public speaking and presentation skills and many other things besides in a business setting. And we do lots of exercises and bring it all to life over a few days. And there was one area of the coursework that I wanted to make even better, and that was use of voice. And so I decided to research the world of voiceover to try and work out how voiceovers use their voice to bring their messages to life in order to do what they do. But I wasn't intending to do voiceover. I was just intending to learn from that and use that information in a corporate setting as part of my trainings. But because I'm a curious sort of fella, I thought, well, if I really want to learn how to do this, I actually need to know how to do it myself so I can teach other people. And before I knew it, I was in a studio having training, getting a coach. And then after a while, it was like, well, why don't you do your reels? Why don't you put a website together? Why don't you get listed on et cetera, et cetera? And it kind of all snowballed from there.
Wow.
So if you could cast your mind back to before the blur started, what did you think voiceover would be about?
Well, that's actually a really good question. And I was probably at a point in my life where I was thinking to myself, you know, you could talk about it, you could think about it, you could read about it, you could watch videos about it, you could do all that stuff and not actually do it for a long time. How about you just jump in with both feet and see what happens? Which probably in certain areas of your life is a very good thing to do because, you know, just get on with it. But equally, there's probably certain other things in life where you should take a bit more of a structured and thoughtful approach. I mean, I wouldn't want to come across a medical doctor or a surgeon who takes that approach. But because I was not necessarily intending to do this as voiceover, I thought it was just a way of enhancing the work that I was doing back then. I mean, you know, how did I know that the world was going to shut and that side of things wasn't necessarily going to be as accessible? So I wasn't necessarily thinking about, okay, so how do I craft a voiceover career as such and then, you know, design that and go and do it, whatever it was. I sort of found myself learning it, getting absolutely fascinated by it, doing it, and then the world shut. And then I thought, well, that's kind of handy in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
So more luck than judgment, but it started with an attitude that I had at the time. Do you know what? Just get on with it. Life's too short. Get on with it and then try and figure it out. So that's a long-winded way of saying, I don't know the answer to your question because I didn't really have any preconceived ideas other than probably what you do is work really hard to train as well as you can, get an agent, and then several times a week, you'll be on the train into town to visit a studio.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of those things, apart from the training really hard, all of those things are completely by the wayside now, aren't they?
Yep.
So here we are. So I had no idea that I'd have my own studio. Mm-hmm. Didn't occur to me that it was even a thing, as I suppose many VOs discovered.
Yeah.
Do you feel 18 months later, voiceover is right for you?
Yes, I do. I'm enjoying it enormously and, you know, I love everything that is going with it. It's definitely challenging and it's certainly, you know, if I was going to say back then, is it easy, hard or impossible to get into, I'd probably foolishly have gone to the easier end of the spectrum. And so, you know, of course, that's all changed because you like any industry that you want to succeed in and do well, of course, it's tough because there are great people out there who are really, really good at what they do. So I guess, you know, I've learned a lot along the way. And still learning, definitely nowhere near there yet. But I always, you know, I always want to try and be the best I can be. So that means it's a constant work in progress.
Is there anything in particular that you said, yes, I am a real VO now?
It's interesting, no? Isn't it? Because I think for me anyway, it sort of comes with time and I'll call it repetition.
Mm-hmm.
By which I mean, so, you know, first time I did a directed session, it was, you know, up here, up here it was like, of course I know exactly what I'm doing, whereas everywhere else it was like, you can imagine, I don't need to fill in the blanks. And then, you know, sometime after that, having done however many it was like completely calm, completely in control. I've got this. I'm doing it. Yeah, this is it. So yes, that did happen for me. It could become complacency if one's not careful. So for me, it's always about, you know, making each piece the absolute best it can be and improving on that.
Any advice or warnings or cautionary tales that you might offer somebody just starting in this business?
I don't have any cautionary tales. But what I would say is, you know, it is a different world now. And whilst I joined, whilst this whole transition was happening, I'm quite certain that there are many people out there who found themselves faced with technology that is a bit of a challenge because, you know, the old world of voiceover, as far as I'm aware, was you get on the train, you head to the studios, it's a director, there's a producer, there's an engineer, there's a whole support structure of one kind or another to take care of the things so that you just concentrate on the words in front of you. Now it's definitely juggling lots of balls and, of course, need to be expert at all of those things. So there's quite a lot to learn and master. But equally, if we've learned one thing over the last 12 months,
and that feels like years.
It does. It's, you know, life is short. Get on with it. You can't hang around. You can't hang around until you're ready. That's it. You can't hang around until you're ready. You'll make yourself ready by needing to jump in when you should jump in.
Well, I just love that, Simon. I love this attitude of just get on with it and then try and figure it out later. I think that's what most of us have been trying to do, just trying to figure out what we've got ourselves into. But yeah, and I totally agree that, you know, we weren't prepared to set up our studios, being forced to do that because of lockdown and having to do this ourselves. When you have to do something, you do it. You just get on with it. Figure it out, don't you? So lovely. Thanks for that, Simon. We're now going to go over to Lorraine Corston, who is a voiceover artist based in Canada. So, Lorraine, how did you get into voiceover?
It's a little bit of a convoluted story because at one point I was between two jobs and I found this course that was on voiceover and I thought, what the heck, let's take this course, see what it's all about. And that kind of sat for a while until I got into wanting to start my own business and you know, whatever, you do your whole path down that road. And I wrote a book and I thought, you know what? I took this course. Why don't I make it into an audiobook as well? And so I narrated my own book and discovered, you know, the ACX platform and all that kind of stuff. And that sat for a while as I struggled to get this business off the ground and shifted into different types. And just as I was getting going on one that I thought, okay, this is it. It involved going to a lot of shows in different cities. And during one of these trips to one of these shows, my sister and I were in a major car crash, which meant that I had a broken wrist, right wrist, which is the one I write with, broken right ankle, broken left arm, broken ribs, cracked sternum, a little bit of a, you know, concussion. So essentially sitting. When you go from being quite active to just sitting, it's not a fun time.
Maddening.
And I find that, and this is really odd for me because I came from an IT background. So it's like black and white, yes and no. I'm not really into the woo-woo thing, but during my journey of trying to, you know, move on and rediscover my kinder, gentler self, I am a firm believer that everything happens for a reason and things show up at the right time. And in late December, I guess, 2019, or right at the beginning of the year of 2020, I got an email for this original course that I'd taken on. Now they were doing more of a subscription thing. And so I sort of got back into this whole voiceover idea. And I thought, why don't I do audiobook? I've done one. Let's try that. And amazingly enough, the very, very, very first audition I did, someone accepted. And I thought, holy crap, this is unbelievable. But anyways, I must admit my very first book, you know how when you start something and you go back to it, it's like your first writing or anything like that, and you look at it and it's cringeworthy. I don't even listen to it because I suspect that it's really, truly, spectacularly cringeworthy. But over the course of all of last year, which my voiceover career really is 1 year, the difference between my very first one and what I do now I'm actually quite pleased with what I generate. I have nearly 40 books under my belt, and I'm constantly looking to make sure that the sound quality is there, because I'm really fussy about the sound and mm-hmm. eliminating too many breaths or mouth clicks. So that was my journey into getting into voiceover. And while I was doing all of that, I started getting into the networking of stuff and how I met Romy.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was just through the Gravy socials, which are always good fun.
We kept crossing paths in all of the mentoring.
Yeah, that's right. And I think in one of them, I was probably saying that I'm not sure about getting into audiobooks. So you reached out and you said, let's have a chat, which was really lovely.
Yeah. And thank you. I find that I'm on a Facebook group and it's ACX Narrators. And I find that you get two things on that platform. You get the really newbies, which is great because you want to have that kind of networking going on. And then you have the people who've been doing this for years and years and years. And the things that come out is like, well, you should charge X number of dollars per finished hour. And they seem to discourage the new ones that are saying, well, you know, maybe I should start smaller. Absolutely. I believe you should start smaller because your time, yes, your time is still your time, but your experience isn't there. And I'll be honest, I started my stuff with that $50 per finished hour, which meant that for one finished hour, it takes about 6 hours to do. And if you're new, it takes even longer. So I was probably making about $3 an hour.
Right.
Just pathetically small. But you've got to start somewhere. And anyways, I couldn't leave the house. And then just at the time when I actually could leave the house, COVID hit and shoved me back into my house. So I've actually been a COVID prisoner since October of 2019.
Oh my gosh.
But anyways, so yeah. And then you get better at it. You get faster. You're still going to take approximately 4 to 5 hours per finished hour. But slowly, I would just increase my rate as I went along. And this year, I've decided that my rate's going to be 100 per finish hour. So that's where we're at so far. Yeah. Next year, it'll be more. I'm also this year planning on trying to get more of the e-learning or corporate narrations, going more away from audio. Well, not away completely. I still enjoy doing audiobooks, but I'm going to be expanding and trying to get contracts with other things.
And those genres seem to work very well with your skill set that you use for audiobooks. So it makes sense.
I've been told a couple of times to go into medical narrations because they're very long, but pronouncing some of those words, you got to really get your tongue around it.
Oh my goodness. I've narrated a couple of audiobooks that had some technical terms in it that were, you know, medical. And you sit there and you ramp it up like 10 times, then you hit the mic and you screw it up on the mic and you're just like, ah, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're just like, okay. I got it 10 times in a row, but no, not number 11, not the real one. No.
I had to do one book that was on Tantra philosophy, and it had a lot of East Indian words in it that I had to search. How in the heck do you pronounce that? And my apologies to the entire Indian nation. I hope I didn't hash it too badly.
Yeah. I have one that I'm working on right now that is somebody did a breakdown of biblical stories, but they took it from like a Hebrew perspective, you know, and interpreting the Bible from the Hebrew perspective. It's pretty scholarly to begin mm-hmm. with, but then there's Hebrew, lot of Hebrew in it. And I'm just like, I asked the rights holder if they could please get the author to give me like a guide, because, you know, trying to find these words, your sources, I mean, you could try Forvo and these different things, but sometimes people don't pronounce them right. So you get, you know, so yeah. And then my source that they gave me back was, please check Forvo whenever you needed a pronunciation. I'm like, awesome. Wasn't already doing that. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you came into voiceover, you were quite focused on audiobooks. So since then, have you planned to do more and expand and go into other genres?
Initially, I went into audiobooks because I figured that was a low-hanging fruit. It was like I knew where to find the work. So that was the route that I chose. By being on Gravy for the Brain, and then you start to hear about, and you can do this, and you can do that, and you can do, you know, animation, and you can do commercials, and you can do movie reels and voiceovers on movies, and the list kept going and growing and growing and growing, and you could be the voice of the elevator in a building or the voice of a toy and, you know, do characters and caricatures, and it just got huge. But I've discovered that, one, I am terrible at accents. Can't do them to save myself. I sound awful, except if I'm imitating a little bit of a Parisian French, I can usually pull that off a little bit, but not quite. They'd know. My voice, just to me, it always just sounds exactly the same. So, you know, I'd be the Lisa Simpsons on, I can't do other voices than myself, as far as I'm concerned. I don't feel that I'm good. I've got a good range for what would be on video games or anything like that. It would take me a lot of more courses and learning to get into character. Whereas most of the audiobooks I've done have been nonfiction, you know, anything that's corporate, anything that's medical, like anything that's sort of a straightforward read where you don't have to come up with a lot of emotion. That's really good for me. Not that I lack emotion. It just doesn't seem to, I need more training. I need more coaching to get into that section, which is one of my goals for this coming year, is to actually go into and find a coach and just get better, because I'm planning on tripling whatever I made this past year. I want to triple my revenue for this coming year. And because I've been moving or looking for houses and all the rest of it, my revenue so far has been like next to zero. So I'll have to hustle for the other half of my year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How did you come to realize that voiceover was the right path for you? Is there anything where you went, oh, that's it?
Probably after I'd started to do a few more books. You know, at first it was, okay, well, let's do this because I can't go anywhere and I'm kind of stuck in the house anyways, and I can maneuver the computer. But just the idea of going back to the business that I was starting to launch when the accident happened, it would require a lot of travel, a lot of my time. And at that point, I simply couldn't get my head around it. I'm sure it was the concussion and everything else, but I just didn't feel that that was where I needed to be. And I thought, you know what? I'm kind of enjoying this stuff and I'm going to pursue it, because one, I'm enjoying it. And two, I'm getting to meet some super cool people in all the networking that I'm doing on this platform. So let's go.
How about advice or warnings or cautionary tales that you might tell the newbie about, you know, when starting out? Maybe did you have any of those kind of things yourself?
Yeah. When they talk about a P2P site, really note down which one they're talking about, because there are some that are similar and one is a little bit sketchy and the other one is a little bit more legitimate. And I went with the sketchy one and I'm figuring that I've just wasted my money.
Yeah,
because you have to pay. I would say, if you're starting out, there are good microphones that are of high quality that are not the USB ones, because you're going to outgrow your USB microphone in about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, when I said things always happen at the right time, and I was on a mentoring session or webinar, and the moderator, the person who was actually talking on it, just, oh, well, you can get a really good microphone and it's an MXL 990. For under $200. And I went, awesome, found it, got my Focusrite Scarlett, whatever. So I would say that the combination of the two, I probably paid about $500 or $600. And now I'm going to be ready for another many years before I get to the point where I'm going to want a different microphone again. Be ready to invest money into what you're doing. If you're thinking of going into voiceover and absolutely not investing any money, go somewhere else. Go find yourself a job and have them pay you. But like any business, because this is a business, you will have startup costs, and don't go cheap. No, I didn't build a whole sound studio. I probably will in my next place because I have the space. But, you know, you have to, if you're going into voiceover, find yourself. And microphones, they're all different, but there are different price points. And just like anything, when I was in IT and I would advise people, it's like, get the best you can afford. Go for the best you can afford right from the get-go. Don't go cheap. It won't last.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And there's lots of YouTube people who will give you advice. But what if you can't afford a coach right away, go to YouTube. There's a lot of them that are out there. Another thing that was suggested to me is find the voiceover artist, listen to their demos and see, like really analyze it. Read out loud. You cannot go wrong with grab a book, grab a newspaper, grab a magazine, read out loud, listen to yourself. And the other thing too is record yourself and let someone else listen to you.
Yep.
Because you know what? You can't hide it. You're going to be a voiceover. People are going to listen to you. You have to be ready to have people listen to you and take the critique it's not criticism, but the critique, take it to heart and see what you can do to make yourself better. I remember one time I had a mentoring session and I did the read and it was trashed. Like they really critiqued it. And the person who was saying the most, she was saying, well, I'm really sorry. And I went, no, don't be sorry. You gave me very good feedback. Mm-hmm. I will take it. I'll absorb it, practice it and get better. Because if you're not harsh, then I could be making really stupid mistakes or I won't ever improve.
Well, and you don't want to feel like a fool when you have somebody that just tells you what they think you want to hear. And then you go out and you end up having an audiobook out there. And the people on the review part of that site, they're not going to be kind. They're going to trash you. And that's a way harder pill to swallow than having somebody be blunt with you and give you good feedback.
I totally agree with you on that one. I'd rather know ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And to be surprised with it later.
Right. Absolutely.
But you do need to have a thick skin because you will audition and audition and audition and hear crickets. Mm-hmm. You won't get the job. If you're lucky, someone will respond and say, well, really sorry. We had a lot of people and you weren't chosen. But mm-hmm. for the most part, you'll be rejected over and over and over and over again.
Right.
But boy, yeah. Oh boy, when you get that job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I know, like, at first I was really excited about if I would get, not excited, I guess isn't the right word, but appreciative, if an author, an RH would reach out and say, you know, sorry, you weren't chosen. And now I'm to the point where I'm like, don't waste your time. Just send me that canned response. I'm good. You know, I don't need that hand holding anymore. Just click that button that generates the auto decline.
Well, most of the time I would just get the auto decline, but once in a while when I think only once where really appreciate you auditioning and they sent a really nice rejection mm-hmm. note. And I thought I responded back, said, you know what? Thank you very much. Cause that doesn't happen too often. And hopefully we'll get to work together at another point on
exactly.
a different book.
You can use it. You could turn it around and use it as marketing and say, I know I wasn't a fit this time, but please keep me in mind for another time. And you've just yep. opened the door to
absolutely.
A future relationship. Yep.
One of the things that I hadn't realized is after I'd auditioned and if I didn't hear anything, I would just delete my auditions. And again, through the ACX narrator Facebook, someone talked about it and said, you know what? I just leave them because you never know when someone might come back and ask you to read, to do some of their books later. And I went, well, the earlier ones, it's probably best if they weren't there. Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So now I just leave my auditions.
How do you find space for that?
Well, it's all on their platform anyway.
Oh,
it's not like it stays. Oh, yeah, yeah. I leave it on the platform so that if the rights holder comes back, they can still re-listen to it.
I see. Yeah, I was thinking on your system and I was like, where?
Oh, I have an external drive.
Yeah.
I have an external drive. And when I'm doing my recordings, I do a raw version and I save it. Then I will master everything. And that's my WAV file. And then I will do an MP3. Mm-hmm. Once the book is completely gone, I'll generally delete the raw version because I won't need it anymore, but you never know when they might come back and ask you for the something on the WAV files or to get the MP3 files later. So I keep those, but I do have it all saved on an external drive. I was in IT. You save everything everywhere.
Right. Yeah. The mantra when you're doing anything on the computer, save and save often.
Back it up, back it up, back it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just back up everything. And you know what, Rain? Thank you. That was great. I love what you said about the fact that you've got to invest. This is a business and you need to spend some money to start up. I think quite often people want to come in and they just want to start recording. They haven't got proper equipment or anything. So, you know, really important point. You do need to be able to invest in order to set up your business as a voiceover artist. So we're going to now speak to Martin Both, who is a voiceover artist in the US, and he's going to share his journey into voiceover. So, Martin, how did you get into voiceover?
First, thanks for inviting me here. I really appreciate it, and I'm excited to be part of this podcast. So, when I think about, you know, what got me interested, I think back, like when I was in like junior high school, I was making films, 8mm films, and narrating and providing various character voices. And so I guess that's sort of what is maybe the root of everything. And then I branched into theater as I got into high school, but mostly on the technical side. And also spent some time doing radio broadcasting. I was on the air for a little bit. Career-wise, wound up taking really a different course towards technology. And so most of my career has been in technology, not really related to voiceover or theatrical or anything like that. And most recently, a few years ago, got the bug again and thinking, you know, I really enjoy the creativity part and wanted to build out some more of my skills in voiceover and doing that. And so I got involved with some training programs and, you know, things have blossomed from there. So that's kind of a long answer, but it's, you know,
hey, it's what happened. It's
yeah.
Very cool.
Martin, what did you think voiceover would be about?
Well, I think initially it was like, I guess I was equating it more similar to radio where, you know, where you're reading copy and there's elements of that, but it's a whole lot more. I guess once you start digging into and peeling away the layers of the onion here, you realize there's, you know, a huge acting component. There's an improv component. There's really getting in touch with being your true self. And when you give these reads to be authentic, right? I mean, mm-hmm. people don't want to necessarily anymore hear the announcer type of a read. They're looking for conversational type reads. And so it's trying to get connected with that. I think that for me has been really, you know, something I've been working on and constantly challenged with, you know, trying to improve myself.
Was there anything that really surprised you when you got into voiceover? Some, maybe a genre or something that you were like, oh, wow.
Well, I guess when I first thought about, well, voiceover, what is it? And you think, you know, television or commercial, and I guess those are the big ones. You think of radio, but then there's all these other things which you don't necessarily even give thought to, like, the integrated voice response systems when you call, you know, there's a, you know, thanks for calling, you know, American Airlines or something like that. There's a voice at the other end of that for most every company. So that's, there's those components. There's the entire video game component. There's a, you know, animation. There's so much of what composes voiceover. And it's growing as we've seen and heard. There's artificial intelligence type voices now where they're recording voice actors for many hours and then putting together all the various words and snippets and mm-hmm. and really creating voices themselves. So I guess that's maybe the biggest surprise to me, is that things, you know, tend to be moving that way. But you know, if you think about it from a cost saving standpoint for a lot of companies, it might be beneficial to go that route, although I think they still have a ways to go with some of the voices because they still sound somewhat robotic. And mm-hmm. I don't know that they'll ever replace the human influence and the human speech patterns completely, but I think they're getting there. So,
yeah. Yeah. I had listened to something a couple weeks ago where it was, I really did think that I was listening to somebody in their booth, you know, doing their thing or whatever. And then there were just a couple of phrases. It was a training type of thing. And then there was just a couple of things where I was like, that was AI. Like, you know, but overall it was pretty good. It wasn't until it got to a couple of parts that like a human would probably stumble over and re-record so you wouldn't notice it. But this was AI, so it just came out sounding funny.
Yeah, I think it's the acting part that the mm-hmm. you can't, I mean, maybe one day you can, but it's hard to teach a computer how to act or teach an algorithm how to act. Mm-hmm. You know, you can teach maybe the intonation, but maybe not the acting part. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So as you went on this journey for voiceover, is there anything in particular, like, well, first of all, have you said voiceover is definitely right for me or not? When did you know?
Well, I think for me, it's an enjoyable thing to do. So I feel like it is right for me. You know, like I feel like this is, you know, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm learning a lot. And so I think, you know, from that standpoint, you know, I'm connected with what I'm doing and wanting to improve myself too. I think, you know, that's the key thing. And people that are coming into this have to realize it's not just, I'm going to go buy a microphone and, start talking, but there's a whole lot more behind it. And it's interesting when you look at some of the forums and things like that online, and there's, you know, Facebook and various other forums where people come in there, and it's surprising to me that people are like, oh, well, you know, I bought a microphone and I have, you know, an interface and a computer. Now, how do I do this? Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's, oh, well, just, you know, read these few lines and then you'll be, you know, doing national commercials or something like that. Like, yeah. But people, I think they don't really have that same impression or maybe understanding of it. But I think when I've seen those, there's always been people helpful in the voiceover community that point out, you know, like you can't just do this like turning a light switch, but it's a gradual process. Mm-hmm. And that's what really stands out to me. Like the voiceover community is very helpful. It's surprising, I guess, to some extent, because you'd think everybody's in some competition, you know, like I don't want to let that person know because they might take a job from me. Mm-hmm. But it's almost mm-hmm. the opposite, where people are like, oh, you know, here, let me give you my, you know, here's a guide of information for you, you know, of questions I had that I'm going to answer and help you with. And that's what's really wonderful about the whole voiceover community. It's a lot of people that really give and care about others and want to help others too. Mm-hmm. So
yes, that's definitely a recurring theme that's been coming up in all the interviews that we've done so far. And certainly that's been our experience too. So do you have any advice or even any warnings for people who want to get into the voiceover industry?
I guess my advice would be it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. I mean, we've heard that periodically from people. Uh-huh. And I think one of the things, you know, as people are getting started is to realize it's not something where people are going to hand this to you on a silver platter and say, here's your voiceover career. There's a lot of work involved. There's a lot of time and research involved on your own part that you'll need to learn about this. These things, you know, you're not going to be able to read a book and pick it up. You're not going to, you know, there's a lot of great books on voiceover out there, but a lot of this is doing it. I mean, just practicing reading, recording, listening back, and then the editing part, which is a whole other component. I mean, you're recording something, but typically you're going to be the one editing that as well, and understanding the entire, you know, sound portion of it and how to make it sound right and how to set up your booth, how to set up all of your levels and things so that product that you're providing is something that is viable and that people can use. And I feel like in voiceover, I mean, there's that whole component, the performance and the editing and the technical part of it, but then you're a business, I guess, is what, you know, you have to realize there's an entire world of the business side of voiceover that you really will need to understand as well. Mm-hmm. Because you're basically selling yourself. You have to understand marketing, you have to understand financials. And I guess I'm not saying in a huge deep depth will you have to understand financials, but I think you have to know the basics of running your own business, because that's essentially what you're doing.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Martin. That was great. I thought it was really interesting that you touched upon the artificial intelligence issue. You know, there is a debate in the voiceover industry about whether artificial intelligence will replace human voiceovers. And like you said, I agree with you, you can't teach a computer to act. Well, at least not yet. So we're safe, I think, for the moment. But let's see how things go in the future. I hope and positive that there will always be a role for people to do the voiceover. And I do sometimes see auditions and they actually say, we want a real human. So they make that point. So I think still space for us. So we're now going to speak to Sarah Jackson, who's a voiceover artist in the UK. So Sarah, please tell us about your journey into voiceover.
Oh, well, I had a little think about this one. When I was very little, from about the age of 3, I learned to use a tape recorder, and my brother and I would spend hours making up stories. And my granddad gave me a record to listen to, and it was called Bugs Bunny Goes to London or something like that. And I just loved it. And it was stories about Bugs Bunny. And I tried to recreate the stories, taping myself on a little Sony tape recorder. So it was such fun. I loved it. And then my parents found a local drama school for me to go to when I was little. And I unleashed my creativity and my imagination there. And it was called the Joan Barnes Theatre School. It was a wonderful place. And they had a homemade wooden stage with homemade curtains and homemade lights made out of huge baked bean tins.
Nice.
And it was just a great place to really learn about acting and voice production. And you see, it's all funny now.
Are you thinking projection?
Pardon?
Projection?
Voice projection, yes. Really? To learn all about the voice and just to have fun. And we did improvisation classes and
fun
with other young kids as well. And then I went on to study drama, film and television and music at university. And I then, after that, went into teaching, didn't enjoy the teaching. And I went back, I auditioned at drama school and trained at Drama Studio London. I just loved it so much, really. And I worked as an actor for 11 years in the theatre, as an actor and a musician. And then I took a break to bring up my family. And life sort of took me on a different journey. I formed a string quartet and taught the violin to young children in schools. But it was only January of last year that I decided it was the right time for me to relaunch my acting career. And I wanted to be a voice artist. It was something that I just had a light bulb moment, because it was something that I wanted to pursue when I started training seriously at drama school. But I always was lucky enough to get jobs in the theatre, and I never really had the time to explore the world of voice. But I always loved it, and I always loved listening to the radio, and I loved listening to The Archers and lots of different radio plays. I liked the medium, and I liked being creative as well. Last year, I think it was probably around January, I auditioned for a talented young film director, and we were going to start filming the week lockdown happened.
Oh, jeez.
So I'd learnt all my words and everything, but we couldn't bring the film together. So instead of filming this, we made the script into a radio play, and I recorded it for him instead. So that was my first experience of getting behind the microphone properly. But I was tapping back into my creative side again, and I loved it. And I decided then that I would do some training and learn everything to do with voice acting and try and learn as much as I could about voice acting and voiceovers and get more experience. I had recorded a voiceover in Soho many years ago, and it was called The Joy of Sussex. It was a radio ad for the Iron Bed Company, and I didn't have any idea what I was going to record until I arrived at the studio in Soho. And they gave me the script, and I had to say right a bit, left a bit, right a bit. Oh, that does look nice there. So you can imagine, I was a bit embarrassed doing this. Director, he kept saying to me, can you become increasingly more excited each take, you know? So it was a little bit embarrassing, but I did it. And I think the client was very pleased. So that was The Joy of Sussex for the Iron Bed Company. That was my first voiceover. But I got the bug then, and I wanted to pursue it. So it's always been a dream of mine.
Oh, it's great to hear about your journey. And what did you think voiceover would be about?
Well, I think I had a pretty good idea about what it would be about. But didn't really realise, you don't realise that the voice is used in everything, in loads of things. No, you've got e-learning, radio drama, podcasts now, audiobook narration, there's television adverts, online learning, and for all kinds of industries, telephone messaging and supermarket advertising. There's video games now that are becoming really popular, and there's a lot of work in video games. There's cartoons as well. So when you think about it, we hear voices all the time and they're everywhere, but I think many people are unaware that there are actors on the other end of the mic doing these voices.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize, do they, that there are voices out there?
No, I just had a
similar to us, really.
I just had a conversation with somebody yesterday, and they asked me, like, you know, what I do, and I said, oh, I do voiceover work, and they said, oh, what's that? You know, and I kind of said, well, yeah, audiobook narration. You know that disembodied voice that you hear over a commercial that's all pictures? That's voiceover. And they were, oh,
yeah. I mean, that the voice is literally everywhere, but it's you're not noticing that there is a person there. You're just hearing the voice, and you take it just goes in, and you don't realize it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. So
it's a huge industry, the voiceover industry.
It is, and it's super varied too. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So how did you know that voiceover was the right fit for you?
I don't know. I just enjoy it, I think, is the answer to that one. And we'll see where it goes. Yeah. You start on something, you think, oh yes, I've always wanted to do voiceover work. You start yourself on a journey and you just have to see where it takes.
Mm-hmm. And if you're enjoying it, that's something. That's gotta be worth something.
My son, he tells his friends that I'm a voiceover artist, and I think, oh, that's quite good, isn't it? Because he tells his friends that I'm a voiceover artist, but I think he's really embarrassed because he's on the Xbox talking to his friends, and they say, Harvey, what's that terrible noise in the background? And it's me doing my voice warm ups.
Oh.
He has to say, oh, that's my mom. She's a voiceover artist. But I mean, if he's telling his friends that I'm a voiceover artist, then that's what I am, I guess.
There you go.
And also, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you think, oh, I can't wait to get into the booth and record something amazing, that's when you know that you're a voiceover artist as well.
I like that. Mm, that's lovely.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You have to, I mean, if you love it, yeah, that's how I feel when I, you know, get ready. There are other things that I have to do to help support myself at this point because I'm still building that voiceover business, and none of those things excite me like voiceover does. And so I agree with that.
I was in a job that I became really dissatisfied with, and it didn't fill me with joy each day. In fact, I dreaded it, and I found it very demoralizing. At the time, I couldn't see a way out, really. I needed the job, and you become really unhappy. And life's too short, really. So if you can find something that you are happy with, then really go for it, I think. Mm-hmm. But there's no guarantee that you'll be able to survive on what you're doing, you know. And I think it's taking small steps. Eventually you might get there, but you know, you have to look at different avenues to go down. You have to have other strings to your bow. That's what I learned training as an actor. That you needed lots of strings to your bow to help you survive, you know, because when you haven't got the work, how are you going to survive then if you're not doing the acting? Because jobs come and go, you know, and they don't last forever. And the same with voiceovers. You may not get the clients that you want. You have to keep searching for them. So you do have to have other strings to your bow. And for me, I was very lucky to follow a passion that was music, and I love playing the violin, so I could make a career out of that. But I also had other skills that I was learning, and I was temping. I did temping work. I did waitressing. I did customer service, and I cleaned toilets. And you know, you have to do lots of different things. But if you find something that you love, then really go for it, because there's nothing worse being in a job that where you're unhappy.
I think what you said about the fact that you've got to have a backup is really useful, because you might not get work immediately because there is so much competition. So having other resources are important. So do you have any advice or even any warnings for people who are wanting to get into the voiceover industry?
Any warnings? I think find people that you can train and learn about the business before you do suddenly build a studio or buy a studio or get all the equipment. Just research what it is you're getting yourself into. And there's some great people that you can learn from. I mean, there's Gravy for the Brain, fantastic resource for training and learning about the industry. There's also the VoiceOver Network, I think. There are people talking about voiceovers on the internet, on YouTube, and they're posting their videos and giving lots of advice, you know, what microphone to get. But it isn't about the microphone. It's really the more important thing is the recording space. You know, you need to treat the space around you that you're recording in. That's really important. So I think if you can train with people and make contacts and network with people, that gives you a lot of confidence behind the microphone as well. And also practice reading to yourself, practice reading into the microphone, and learn voiceover exercises as well, and learn about your voice, because you need to rely on your voice and you need to know how to look after it properly. I think that would be my main advice to someone who's thinking about doing a voiceover, is learn about the industry and get some training behind you, because that will give you confidence in the long run.
That's fantastic. It's really good to hear from you, Sarah. I love the bit where you said there are voices everywhere. It's so true. We just don't realise that that's the thing. We're hearing voiceover all the time in our day-to-day life. We just don't realise that there's somebody behind that voice who's doing that. And I also think it's really important that you said you're doing voiceover because you enjoy it and, you know, you have a passion for it. And that's so important. And I think most people, or most voiceover artists, you know, want to do voiceover because they absolutely enjoy it. I love that. So thank you so much, Sarah. So over to you now, Jessica.
That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us. Next week, we'll be talking with more voiceover artists about their experiences. So don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Also, feel free to share it with everyone. And if you want to get a hold of us, feel free to join our Facebook group. That's Facebook.com/groups/voiceovergirlsacrossthepond.
Thanks for joining us for the VoiceOver Girls Across the Pond podcast. This is where we would normally shout out to our sponsors.
Rami, we don't have any sponsors yet.
I know, but if we did, this would be the shout out. Hint, hint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast.
And tell all your friends, your family, your neighbors, and everyone else.